What's going on?
What's going on, bro? How are you?
I'm doing well. Just finished up a couple training sessions and feeling pretty depleted, but good otherwise. How about yourself?
Yeah, pretty depleted from 4 days of work, but tomorrow's Friday, so.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, bro. Did you manage to catch some of the fights last weekend?
So I watched the main event, but otherwise they're still like sitting in my queue to be watched. So I did see the Gastelum finish, and I did see the leg break in the undercard.
Yeah,
I'm so pumped to be seeing leg locks becoming like a significant factor
for sure
in mixed martial arts. I mean, they have been in jiu-jitsu for the past few years, and so I'm pumped to see that make its way over to MMA. I feel like it adds a sort of exciting new dynamic to it that you can tell guys just don't really know how to deal with. Like, you know, Gastelum had a way out there, you know what I mean? But he just, you could tell he didn't see it.
And yeah, now, he was pretty much rolling into the heel hook, so like rolling exactly the opposite way.
Yeah, because like Hermanson had, you know, it took him a while to really, you know, relatively speaking, to really secure it. And, you know, so I mean, Gastelum had the opportunity to get out. You could tell he just didn't know how to. And that's not even necessarily Gastelum's fault. Just the game is evolving very rapidly. And like we saw this even, you know, when Vinny Magalhães got his leg broken, you know, a couple months back.
I mean,
Vinny's one of the best in the world of the jiu-jitsu of 10 years of the jiu-jitsu of 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But he, you know, but you could tell he just didn't know what the hell to do when he was put in some of those new spots.
For real. I mean, you got a couple of guys that transition into MMA that are kind of leg lock aficionados, like Ryan Hall, that heel hook that he, the Imanari roll he had against BJ Penn was masterful. Like, absolutely, probably one of the coolest fucking submissions I've ever seen in MMA, dude. Like, leg kick.
Oh, absolutely.
Drops the Imanari roll, locks it in. And Gary Tonin, I know he fights in 1FC, but I mean, he's part of the Danaher Death Squad, and these guys are leg lock fucking machines, man. So,
well, absolutely. I mean, they definitely, I think they took what guys like Dean Lister and Rusamir Palhares had been doing for years, and they not only adopted it in a significant way, but then tweaked it to, you know, just take it to that next level. And I know that's largely hyperbole.
Yeah,
exactly. But yeah, they systematized it in a way that we haven't seen before. And now, like, because they've clearly replicated that success now. It's not just Gordon Ryan. You know, it's Gordon Ryan, Eddie Cummings, Gary Tonin, you know, so many people.
You got a laundry list of guys. Nikki, dude. Nikki, I mean, the.
Yeah, like, 100%. He's like 16. And
yeah.
He's, you know, and he's putting it on everybody.
Yeah, he's beating up black belts, dude.
Exactly. Well, didn't he beat Uriah Faber too?
He beat Uriah. I mean, he fought in ADCC too. I think he replaced who did he replace? I'm not sure, but he had some tough matches against AJ Agazarm. I mean, like, he's fucking game, dude. Like, as far as Nogi Jiu-Jitsu is concerned, like, Nicky Ryan's no joke. I think just give it some time for him to get on that Gordon Ryan diet and fitness plan, and he'll be he'll be ripping people apart, no problem.
Yeah, that very specific diet and fitness plan, yeah.
Yeah, man, for sure. So it's super cool, like you said, to see the heel hooks coming along. I mean, John Danaher is like, I remember seeing him on The Ultimate Fighter and everyone saying like how much of a wizard he was when GSP was coaching, but like really hadn't heard the name too much. Even when I was training jiu-jitsu, hadn't heard much about John Danaher, but after actually getting involved like in the jiu-jitsu circuit and watching what this guy has done to every single position. You know, what he's done is he's isolated the strongest and easiest positions to get in jiu-jitsu, and he's just turned it into like this masterful system, like kimuras, triangles, attacking the back, leg locks, passing guard. Like, the guy's an animal. He's just a monster.
Oh, absolutely. It's and that's part of what I love too about not only jiu-jitsu, but really MMA as a whole. I mean, and actually I would say especially MMA, because like as relatively new as jiu-jitsu is in the form that we have it today,
yeah,
MMA is even newer.
For sure.
And so it's like, so unlike, you know, baseball or football, which have been around for decades. You know, I mean, baseball, I think, is over a century old. I don't really know the history too well.
Yeah.
But, you know, but we're seeing the sport evolve at such a breakneck pace that, like, for instance, a guy like Chuck Liddell, who is one of the best to do it at his peak, would frankly be garbage by today's standards.
Yeah, for sure. You know,
that's not a knock on him.
It's absolutely just
people took what he did and then, you know, evolved it. And you don't see that in other sports because, you know, like the definitive book of basketball has already been written.
Yeah.
But like, you know, we haven't seen that in MMA and we probably won't for some time now just because things evolve so quickly. And there's so many things to just be good at that you'll notice like these things are cyclical where like there'll be periods where it's all about striking, then periods where it's all about wrestling. And, yeah. But then once a new component of it sort of like, you know, takes its position at the top, then everybody devotes their time to how to beat that. And then that's when something else comes up.
100%, dude. It was like, honestly, I credit John Jones to a lot of that, actually, to this like kind of new MMA that we see, like throwing obstacles in people's ways that are tricky and creative and having to fight around it. I think that this guy kind of pioneered that that teep kick to the leg, like, you know, the spinning back elbow, like foot stomps, you know, shoulder strikes to the face in the clinch. Like, this guy's pretty much the guy that brought this into the cage in the first place. So,
100%. I mean, that's frankly as much of a scumbag as John Jones is. he deserves a lot of credit for the innovation that he's provided to the sport. Because yeah. I mean, love him or hate him, and regardless of the things that he's done outside of the cage, and hell, even some of the things he's done inside the cage, as far as like PED use and stuff like that goes. You know, I mean, he's just, you know, he understands fighting on a level that most can't even imagine.
Yeah.
And I think too, the simple fact that he's as gifted as he is, but still has that respect and fear for his opponent that I feel like would give many other fighters a lot more longevity. You know, it's impressive. And it leads to those, those innovative, you know, techniques that he ends up, you know, unveiling in his fights.
Yeah. I just remember that fight against, what was it, Andre Guzmão, this capoeira guy. Holy shit, man. Like the suplexes and the spinning back elbows and the spinning back kicks and the teeps to the legs and the front kicks to the face.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was just an absolute clinic. Like, I mean, and I think this fight was maybe 10 years ago. So thinking about MMA 10 years ago, it was pretty fucking wild to see, because 10 years ago, we're talking about guys like Rich Franklin were still fighting and Dan Henderson was still young. And
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. John Jones fought Stephen Bonner.
Yeah, dude.
You know? I mean, and actually, like, I think that was the first time I really saw him use that spinning elbow. Because I remember he made Bonner faceplant with it.
He did off the clinch, like, right?
Yep, absolutely. It was right against the fence, I think. And like as he threw it, Bonner kind of turned his head and it dinged him right in the back of his skull.
Yeah.
And then just
face planted.
Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, poor Stephen Bonner. Because that fight did not go his way.
For sure, man. Did you get to see the Rafael Fiziev versus Mark J. Casey fight?
I missed it. Tell me about it.
So he's the striking coach over at Tiger MMA. And it was just like the defense this guy was throwing around was absolutely wild, dude. Like Jacasey would throw these head kicks and he was just like Matrix sliding out of the way. Like straight up, like, wow. I'm almost positive you've seen the video where it's a Muay Thai fight and the guy throws that like super high angle high kick and the dude just like fucking Matrix out of the way.
Yep. Oh yeah.
He was pretty much doing that the whole fight.
That's cool. I mean, so like, because like the lean back can be really tricky, but it is always super impressive when you see guys who can do it well. And so yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. This week has been so crazy for me.
Yeah, no
worries. I'm doing a lot of work projects, and I've got a book coming out next month.
Oh yeah.
So I've been trying to finish up that rough draft to send out to the editor and all that. But I do have those fights queued up. I'm gonna watch them. I did see the absolute clinic, though, that Figueiredo put on Benavidez.
Holy shit, dude. I mean, okay, the last fight, I guess a lot of people can say, all right, Benavidez arguably maybe could have won the first round. In the second round, like, it was the headbutt that got him. Like, that's what really, you know, put him on career street, and that's the only reason why Figueiredo dropped him. But this fight, clean fight. I didn't see any fouls. I just saw a lot of damage, a lot of knockdowns, a lot of submission attempts, and Figueiredo really went in there, and, like, he knew that when he was landing, it was fucking hurting him, and he knew that at some point he was going to finish him, and that was just probably beat down of the year so far.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it, like, and unfortunately for Benavidez, is that this is, it wasn't even, like, so quick that you could argue he got caught.
Yeah.
Like, he just was getting manhandled in every aspect of it. He'd get drop standing, which I think happened, like, three times, then get out grappled, and, you know, I mean, and he was, like, Benavidez seemed just good enough to slow Figueiredo down, but not good enough to actually stop him. And, like, yeah, and that's an instance where, like, Benavidez is really tough, but in that, in fights like that, like, your toughness is just going to get you hurt.
100%. I saw a really interesting segment on DC and Ariel Helwani's podcast today where they were debating whether or not Joseph Benavidez is the best fighter in the UFC to not hold a belt. And they both unanimously said no.
Yeah, I mean, to not hold a belt. I mean, honestly, like, I'd be thinking, like, guys like Wonderboy.
Yeah.
Who, like, you know, I think arguably won those two fights with Tyron Woodley.
Rory McDonald, you know what I mean? Also.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, like, actually, yeah, Wonderboy would probably be my pick for that. The, you know, the best to never hold a belt.
For sure. I mean, I was trying to think of they gave some pretty good examples. They said, like, Dan Henderson, Alistair Overeem. They talked about the Diaz brothers. I mean, it's a really hard debate, like, who's the best fighter to fight in the UFC and not hold a belt. They said Damian Maia. It's a tough one for me.
That is tough. I mean, honestly, though, I would still pick Wonderboy just because, yeah. Just because, like we said about how the sport's evolving so much, that would imply that the more recent fighter is going to be the better one.
100%.
And I feel like, in like as nasty as like as both the Diaz brothers are, they've always had like this huge gaping hole in their game, in that they refuse to wrestle.
Yeah.
They refuse to check low kicks.
Yep.
And then, you know, and their ability to win is largely contingent on you not figuring that out.
Yeah, 100%. And they,
you know, and also too, and this isn't to knock them, because I mean, obviously everybody has holes in their game. But both of them, with their style, seem to be far less effective unless they can get your back against the fence. You know what I mean? Like when you see Nick Diaz versus Carlos Condit, like, you tell, as much as that wasn't a super fun fight to watch, is because Condon understood that, and so he would just, like, stick it, you know, stick, move, and pivot to make sure his back never touched that fence. And Diaz just couldn't corral him against it.
For sure. And you see, like, the Conor McGregor fight, the first and the second, the whole Jorge Masvidal fight with Nate Diaz, yep. Like, even the Anthony Pettis fight, like, the work that this guy does in that clinch, you know? Like, he really needs to back you up against the fence. He needs to be in your face. And then we do see versions of Nate and Nick when they're really throwing hands with guys that, you know, don't really use their wrestling that well, like Michael Johnson and Gray Maynard at that point in his career. But I completely understand what you're saying. Once you get a guy that can really just be disciplined with the Diaz brothers and, like, really just not let them put the pressure on them, get their backs against the fence, and really just, like, use angles to land strikes and wrestle, like, these guys usually win nine times out of 10.
Oh, wait, exactly. And now, that said, like, you know, both Diaz brothers have been involved in some of my favorite fights of all time. Like, I loved Nate and Connor's rematch. Nick Diaz versus Paul Daly is one of my favorite one-round fights ever.
Sick fight.
That was just absolutely strike force, amazing. Right? Yep, absolutely. And but that said, it doesn't change the fact that these are limitations on their style. And you know, and every fighter has them, but like, But yeah, I mean, that is an interesting question though. Who the best to never hold a belt is? And honestly, I would even say like Cowboy. At the
I was just gonna say Cowboy Cerrone, dude.
Yeah, I mean
Cerrone.
You know, he's you know, because yeah, I mean, it's tough to find somebody who's, you know, more skilled than he is. I mean, now he's got like a lot of mileage on his body, and he does it. You know, he's not super durable anymore.
Yeah.
But dude, I mean, he is an amazing talent, and actually it
shows you how slick he is, right? That he's still kind of. I mean, I think he's on fight skids now, but he's always in there. He's always in the mix, you know. Like he's always kind of he throws the fuck down, dude, for his age and his as long as he's been fighting, you know. It's unreal.
Exactly. And actually, skill-wise, I would put him ahead of Wonder Boy. So I would like to retract my answer and say Cowboy.
I think that's the first thing.
Yeah, so Cowboy is on the tail end of his career. And he, you know, so I mean, it just doesn't seem like he could take the punishment he used to be able to. I mean, now granted, his last three fights were McGregor, Gaethje, and Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, those are three, like, super tough outings.
Yeah, like, those are the three toughest, you know, heaviest hitters at 155.
Yeah.
And, you know, and actually, McGregor, he fought at 170, who's going to be hitting him harder there.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, and so, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, unfortunately, like, his body took a beating.
Absolutely, but yeah, I would have to agree with you on that one, 100%. I think if I had to pick one fighter to be the best guy in the UFC to never hold a belt, it's got to be Donald Cerrone.
Yeah, because like Maya too is definitely up there. I mean, obviously he is elite, at jiu-jitsu, but he's always had big limitations as far as straight wrestling and striking go.
Yeah,
he's gotten better at both, but you can tell he's not an explosive athlete. So he's always been like a little too plodding to be truly dangerous at both.
Yeah,
like he used to, and honestly, I feel like he got kind of worse the better he got at those.
Yeah, for sure. Like, remember how confident he was going into that Marquardt fight? Like, I mean, the guy was on a fucking tear, right? Like, I thought that performance he had against Chael Sonnen was pretty wild, dude, to like clinch trip him, to mount, to triangle choke submission in the first round, dude. And then he comes out, fights Nate Marquardt, yeah, and then just like, what was it, like 30 seconds in, just gets zinged with a right hand, dude. And
I remember that looking like a fucking action movie where like both feet were off the ground and he just went flying.
Yeah.
And he looked so fucking good against Chael Sonnen at that point. And I was like, holy shit. You know, it's like, because people like Chael, somebody who's had a very imperfect skill set himself, but people don't throw him like that.
No way, dude. Yeah.
It's like, but if Damian Maia today fought Chael Sonnen, he'd probably try to shoot a double on him, and it would not go his way.
Yeah, Chael would fucking, one, sprawl, two, get into that side position and just bash him out with punches. So.
Absolutely. Like, actually, one thing I really love about Maia's game is that he's really good at implementing his grappling while still standing.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we saw this when he fought on the stun gun at one, which I think his first fight at 170.
Yeah, it's on Young
like
Kim.
He's just very good at, you know, initiating that, you know, while still on the feet, which is a tough skill set for people to acquire, but Damian Maia is fucking awesome at it.
Yeah, and honestly, I think that kudos to him. I mean, obviously the modern day mixed martial artists would love to be well-rounded at everything, but I think he knows he's not the fastest guy. I think he knows he's not the strongest guy, but in terms of technique and imposing his jiu-jitsu on people, I think he knows that he is top two or the best at welterweight at doing that. And I mean, you see the way he just level changes, the way that everything he does is to set up some sort of a body connection where he can either clinch you up or take you down and just impose his top game on you. So honestly, just another guy that honestly could be one of the best fighters in the UFC to not hold a belt.
Absolutely. I think really his kryptonite always seemed to be just the super athletic types, like Anderson Silva and Tyron Woodley, who he just lacked the ability to get really close to either of them.
Yeah, Kamaru Usman also. Leon Edwards was another fight I think he lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just like really good, strong wrestling base, good hands, and just like guys that can stuff takedowns. Like it's just a shitty matchup for him. So,
yeah. Well, that's why I am hoping that the UFC like gives him a quote unquote good fight for his last one. You know, yeah. Like give him like Diego or Matt Brown or something. Make it like a loser goes home fight. And then just have that be it.
Diego, you know? Please.
And, dude, say what you will about Diego. He's obviously, like, a super polarizing figure.
Yeah.
He's a fucking psycho. But dude, you got to hand it to somebody who's fought in 4 weight classes for the past 15 years. And he actually, like, had, like, a brief little resurgence up until the Chiesa fight.
Yeah, for you sure. Know? It looked like he was doing well until he dropped his entire corner.
Yeah. Oh, God. I mean, well, the unfortunate thing about Crazy is that you just never know when it's gonna fucking rear its head. Because I remember
can't fix he was like, Crazy.
Yeah, like he was willing to fucking go home on a shield, you know, defending Jackson Wink to Cowboy, which honestly that would have been a fun fight.
Yeah.
And you know, in a good one to give Cowboy, you know, and but like you know. No, and then to drop them himself for exactly the reasons that Cowboy was saying. Just, it's a bad look. It was a bad look for Diego.
Yeah, 100%. Fight card this week's pretty solid. Undercard's got a ton of fights on it. We had Tanner Boser, who ran through, I think it was Felipe Lins, like a couple weeks ago. We got Nathaniel Wood, Nicholas Dalby, Francisco Trinaldo. Main card also looking pretty sick. This guy, Khamzat Chimaev, I think he's got on the quickest modern-day UFC turnaround. I think he fought 10 days ago and won, and they just threw him on another card. So
That is incredibly impressive. I feel like we're seeing a lot of that. Like guys are being far more active now than I really ever remember anybody being.
Yeah.
You know, aside from maybe God, you know. And, you know, because occasionally you'll have a guy like Cowboy or like Michael Bisping who will just do, like, quick turnarounds. But it's generally not great for you. Like, yeah. I mean, that was ultimately, like, what retired Bisping was. He fought, was it Kelvin Gastelum, like, 2 weeks after?
2 weeks after he got choked out by GSP in Beijing, China.
Yeah, I respect it. I respect him for wanting to get right back in there, but that was a poor choice.
Yeah, for sure. Regardless, really sick fight on this card is we got the return of Alexander Gustafsson at heavyweight against Fabricio Werdum.
That should be really fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Werdum did not look good against Olenek. Like
he openly admitted, though, that he was training via, like, Zoom call, essentially. Like, he wasn't sparring. He was just kind of doing his workouts and taking advice from his coaches. And he openly criticized himself and said, plain and simple, like, training – for a fight over a camera just does not work.
Yeah, absolutely. I missed that interview. And but I mean, hate to say it because obviously it's easy to talk shit from the couch.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he looked like he was training via Zoom.
Yeah, he definitely looked like he was training via Zoom. You could tell that his timing was off. And Olenek is one of the, he's a grinder, right? Like his style is to be a grinder. It's to not get knocked out. Throw big punches. If he lands and drops you, he's probably going to submit you. And if he doesn't, he's just going to shoot for takedowns. So, I mean, when you have a guy that his game plan is so simple, right? Like, he's a guy that can probably, like, he can not train, right? Just come up in shape and just work that game plan all the time. But a guy like Werdum, you know, who we've seen throughout his career have various different game plans. You know, like sometimes he plays a striker. Sometimes he's the guy that submits you on the ground real quick. You can understand how, like, not having any training for a fight like Alexei Olenek, who is a tricky heavyweight to fight, he really came out on the short end of that stick.
Well, and also, too, like, if I remember correctly, he was, like, going for arm bars and stuff. And on a guy, like, as, like, kind of stocky and as
Olenek, thick, yeah.
Like, to feel like a tank. I mean, that's a tough, like, that's a, you know, tough sub to get.
Yeah, have you ever, like, full-mounted a fucking big-ass guy with huge-ass arms and try to armbar him, dude? It's, like, never going to happen. The guy just sits there like a mummy, and those arms aren't going anywhere.
Exactly. Now, if anybody's going to do it, it's Fabricio Werdum, but clearly it didn't work out for him.
Yeah.
It was tough seeing Werdum like that. I am glad that he at least had a reason for it, because, I mean, honestly, if that was going to be Werdum going forward, then I think he'd have to really, like, reconsider what he was doing.
He's in his 40s really now, isn't he?
Well, exactly. I mean, he's been doing this forever, you know? I mean, like, God, I remember, he was, like, the first one to really beat Fedor.
He's sub Fedor, dude. He also was the first person to beat Cain Velasquez, dude, like,
Exactly. And that was what would probably be considered close to the tail end of his career.
Yeah. Because then he fought Stipe Miocic in his first title defense and got fucking steamrolled in under a minute. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but like at this point, I mean, God, because Werdum's another one. He hasn't even been fighting for like 15 years.
Werdum, you fought in pride, bro. Yeah, Werdum's first fight was in 2002, bro.
Yeah, so he's been doing this for 18 years. Like, 18, that is ridiculous. I mean, like, nobody would fault him at all for riding off into the sunset. And honestly, like, I think he's one of the best heavyweights ever.
He's beat big names, I guess. Gabriel Gonzaga, Alistair Overeem, Alexander Emelianenko, Gonzaga again, Brandon Vera, Antonio Bigfoot Silva, Fedor, Roy Nelson, Nogueira, Mark Hunt, Cain Velasquez, Travis Brown. I mean, you don't beat all those guys when you're just a slouch. You know, those are all, like, massive names in MMA, so.
Oh, exactly. I mean, Werdum is one of the best heavyweights to ever do it. And so I just hope that he's not one of those guys who's going to hang around too long, you know, because that's always tough.
100%.
Speaking of which, aren't Shogun and Lil Nog fighting this weekend, too?
They are, dude, and that's going to be an absolute sick fight because the way I think about it is, you know, if they're going to keep fighting, you might as well just let these guys fight each other, right? Like, it was like the Tito versus Chuck fight, right? The guys want to fight. I mean, they might as well be fighting each other. So if you want to put Shogun in there versus Mini Nog, fucking let it happen, dude. I love that fight.
Oh, yeah, dude, I'm all for, you know, let's say a Legends division.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, you know, because, like, you know, because we're seeing that. So we're seeing guys who kind of need that in every division. Like, I'd love to see Aldo keep fighting. But maybe have him fight, like, Uriah Faber again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like don't put him against, you know, a young up-and-comer like fucking Aljamain Sterling.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Bring back Don Fry. I want Don Fry versus Mark Coleman now.
Actually, I think both of them had, like, really serious health issues. Yeah. So, they're lucky to still be with us.
Yeah. In their 60s.
Exactly. I remember having to – I remember donating something to a cause for Mark Coleman. I know we had, like, some serious
– back surgery, like, issues, so I think.
Yeah. So, like, I remember, like, I bought a pair of his, like, shorts or something just to support him. And Don Fry, I think, had something come up, too. I don't know if it was cancer or something.
It's called being old, dude. It just happens.
Yeah, he was somebody, like, both of them were a couple guys who lived hard, too. You know what I mean? Like, they were.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Like, you know, like, because I've never met Don Fry. I'm pretty much told he's exactly as advertised. And it's just, like, a hard guy.
He looks exactly as advertised. And I remember for a while he was putting out these, like, do you remember those, like, fireside chat YouTube videos of him just puffing cigars and giving people advice?
Yep, those were fantastic.
That was some of the best MMA content that's ever been produced, man. That was absolutely unbelievable. But I wanted to ask you, what do you think about Gustafsson moving up to heavyweight?
I think it could be one of two ways. I think if he's going to genuinely devote to being a heavyweight, like, you know, and he's putting on size and stuff like that, you know, still being an athlete at that heavyweight, then I think this could be good for him.
Yeah, Jean Vellante.
Exactly. But to play devil's advocate, yeah, if he goes the Vellante route and he just doesn't want to cut weight anymore and he's saying, well, fuck it, I don't have to make weight, so I could do whatever. then that's a problem. And he is also somebody who, let's be real, one of his big advantages was his size. Now, that's not going to be as pronounced at heavyweight as it was at 205. So, we'll see. I mean, he's a super talented guy. I would love to see him somehow get a belt around his waist at some point, just because, like, it sucks how, like, the, you know, because he's you know, one of my favorite fighters in the UFC, but, like, the high points of his career are almost beating DC and almost beating John Jones.
Yeah, that's who actually DC picked as the – DC's pick was Gustafson for the best fighter to never hold the belt because
– Yeah, and as I'm talking about it, he's definitely up there. Cause, yeah, like,
I mean, you're talking about pound for pound two of the greatest fighters to ever do it, like Cormier, double champ, John Jones just – never been beaten. Exactly. He came close to beating both of them. So,
yeah, I mean, some people actually had Gustafson winning the first fight, you know, and I mean, obviously he came up real short in the second one, but like, I think John, this is another testament to how smart of a fighter John Jones is, where you notice he always looks far more dominant in rematches. You know, he just, you know, he will come in with the perfect game plan. He will just fucking put it on you. And then Gustafson, if I remember correctly, had like some health issues going into that. And it just showed, you know, because I mean, unfortunately, it kind of turned out to be light work for Jones.
100%. I actually think that fight kind of outlined a path to beat Gustafson and those other losses that he had, you know, like where, you notice that a lot of guys were trying to take him down now, like Anthony Smith when he choked him out in that fight. And I think a lot of people saw that as much as he is a tough wrestler, like he can get on top of you and impose damage, that off his back, he can't really do much, which definitely makes for an interesting dynamic against a guy like Verdum, where I think that obviously in this fight, all going well and Gustafson showing up 100%. And like you mentioned, like, taking the weight going up seriously, he's the faster, snappier, rangier puncher. Verdum's obviously going to want to try to fight him in the clinch. So in the event that Verdum gets him down to the ground, like, Verdum is obviously a world championship caliber black belt in jiu-jitsu, and he's no fucking slouch, and he is way bigger than all those guys. He's way bigger than Anthony Smith. And if you had a hard time with Anthony Smith on your back, you're definitely going to have a hard time with Mauricio Verdum on your back. So I see this as like a sprawl and brawl fight, 100%.
Exactly. And that's why, honestly, I kind of feel like it won't be close either way.
Yeah.
You know, if Verdum can hit the takedown, I think he'll have a pretty easy night.
And if it's on the feet.
Exactly. But, like, you know, because, like, Verdum's a good striker, but he's not as good as Alexander Gustafsson.
For sure.
So I think it'll be – whoever wins, they will do it decisively.
Yeah, it's going to be, before all the fights kids happen, like, one of the coolest finishes I think I've seen was the Gustafson versus Glover Teixeira finish, man, where he was just slipping right hands, uppercut, slipping right hands, uppercut, and then boom, just right hand down the pipe and knocked him out. So you know he's – I mean, he's fucking badass, dude. I think on the feet – Verdum's in for a rough night. I think he's really just going to try to clinch, take him down, work top game. And I kind of see that's how the fight's going to go, to be honest. Unless Gustafson can show some, like, outrageous power, like, in the first exchange, I think this is the way the fight goes.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, like, I would say a smart money bet.
Yeah.
That said, Verdum kind of does some silly things up there, so who knows. But if I were to put money on it, I would say Verdum clinches, takes him down, subs him.
Yeah, that's, I think, a pretty fair bet. Main event's pretty awesome fight. I mean, Darren Till, middleweight debut against Kelvin Gastelum. He came out with the decision. I actually rewatched the fight, and I agree with the judges on that one. I think at the time when he fought Gastelum, he was like the number three guy in the world. Now he's fighting Whitaker, who's the number one ranked middleweight behind, I think, Israel Adesanya, right, is the champion. I think Whitaker's still number one, and Costa is somewhere two or three.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how it goes, depending on how Whitaker decides to fight.
For sure.
I think it's on Whitaker either way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he made a really good point. I think for one, he's probably well rested, because I think that it does make a lot of sense that he was fighting a lot and he came out of a lot of wars. So then fighting in a fight against a fresh Adesanya, you know, who's had some time to recover from that Gaslam fight he had. It's a tough outing either way. But what Whitaker was saying was that Till pretty much is kind of a one-trick pony, which, okay, I hate to say it, but as much as Darren Till is talented, he really does just rely on that heavy rear kick and that left hand from the southpaw stance. And I just don't see a lot of other ways that he can beat Robert Whitaker. And to a degree, I think Robert Whitaker's striking is slicker than Masvidal's. And Masvidal seemed to do a pretty good job against Darren Till. So I think that Whitaker obviously holding more power in his hands and probably just as quick, he'll probably get a finish against Till.
I agree. I mean, admittedly, I've always thought Till was kind of overrated. I mean, let's be real. He kind of, you know, like, he fought Tyron Woodley off of a gift decision over Wonderboy in England. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, now granted, that was a largely uneventful fight, and you know, and with Wonderboy being the counter striker that he is, it's like that's how a lot of his fights that don't end in a finish are going to go.
Yeah.
But you know, I thought Till was exposed badly against Woodley as just being utterly hapless on the ground. I think. And so now that said, I think if Whitaker tries to run out there and brawl with, you know, with Till, like he tried to do against Adesanya for whatever reason. I mean, That's why, like, yeah, rested or not, he fought stupid against Adesanya.
Yeah, he did.
And it's so, like, you know, and again, it's your brain does silly things when you're in there. And so, I, you know, try not to sound too critical as I criticize. but, you know, it's a but. I think this should be a pretty easy night for Whitaker if he fights smart.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, we saw against Romero fights that when Whitaker does get you on your back, even against a high-class wrestler like Romero, he was doing a really good job of, like, landing punches and controlling, and he does have a good top control. I mean, we even saw it when he was fighting against Jacare, you know, who's beast off his back, So... And Till obviously does not possess any sort of the same level of wrestling or jiu-jitsu as Jacare or Yoel Romero. So even if Whitaker were to fight smart and try not to risk it on the feet, which I still think he would win the exchanges, if it does become this, like, clinch, like, wrestle, close, like, in close quarters fight, I think that Whitaker blows away with him, beats his ass.
100%. I mean, like, cause like that's kind of where I'm at. I think he'd probably still win on the feet, but he will win if he takes him down. So, like, why give Till any opportunity?
Yeah.
You know, and so I, like, that's why, like, well, I think this will be a fun fight. It is not overly compelling as far as.
Absolutely not. And if you look at the finishes that Till's had in his career, I mean, the only notable finish I can remember was the Cowboy Cerrone finish. And I think if you rewatch that fight back and you see how much fucking bigger Darren Till is in comparison to Donald Cerrone, Donald literally walks around probably at like 176, 175, like doesn't cut a lot of weight at all. Till was like 200 fucking pounds in that fight, dude.
Well, and so I actually had the opportunity to put Cowboy through a workout when he was in town. He was, I believe, the stunt coordinator on the Equalizer 2.
Yeah.
And so, when I was running my gym in the Plymouth area, he, Joe Lozon, who was one of the owners of the gym, ended up sending it my way. And, he had told me that in the locker room before that fight too, he broke his foot.
Oh shit.
And so he was sparring with Joe Schilling in the back room, and he kicked his elbow accidentally and then ended up breaking his foot. And he's not the type of guy who wants to make excuses.
Yeah.
So he never even mentioned it. Honestly, like, the only reason why he told me that is because I tried to have him do bear crawls and his foot still couldn't really support it. And so I just, I think, especially when you factor in that, you know, it's like that win becomes far less impressive.
Sure.
Than you beat a one-legged cowboy.
Who actually was putting up a decent fight until he got finished, so.
Exactly. I mean, Till has a big punch, and he's mean, and he's aggressive. And it, because of that, if you play into that game, he could be a tough night out for you. But I think he got some not completely deserved hype around him.
For sure.
That I'm amazed it's still there after the absolute handling that Tyron Woodley gave him.
One of the biggest reasons why I do like Darren Till, and I hate to admit it, as a Brazilian, I love that Scouse accent Portuguese he speaks in the fucking cage, dude, after he wins his fights. It's absolutely unbelievable, dude. And he does have some of the best post-fight interviews of the modern day.
Yeah, they may also steal a cab. Who knows?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, I was reading that. Tenerife stole a fucking cab, yeah. What a psycho, yeah, dude.
I think it's okay to still be a fan of somebody, even if they're a psycho. Like, I'm a big Conor McGregor fan. He can be a, you know, when he goes nuts, he can be a huge douchebag. But like, yeah. You know, and so it's like, you know, but yeah, Till's a good personality and a good entertainer to have in the UFC. But
his Portuguese is fucking awesome, dude. I absolutely love this dude speaking Portuguese. I love it, dude. I love it.
Hey, cool.
I would find myself occasionally, like, I found this interview that he did with, like, Brazilian ESPN, dude. And, like, honestly, dude, like a gangsta little guy from Liverpool, England, like, makes his way to Rio de Janeiro, Brazil after getting fucking stabbed at a nightclub, dude. This guy knows a lot of Brazilian slang. Like, this guy knows – I guarantee you this guy knows way more about Brazil and certain Brazilian words than most Brazilians in Brazil know, dude. That's a tongue twister.
Honestly, like, that is impressive. And it's like, and also, too, like, to be able to do, because, like, doing his bit could easily be incredibly offensive. And so the simple fact that he's able to do it and have it not be offensive is a W in itself.
Yeah, 100%, dude. I mean, guys, insane. Can't wait to see this fight. We were talking about Fabrício Werdum earlier, who trains out of Kings MMA. And speaking of Kings MMA, Rafael Cordeiro, who is now Mike Tyson's boxing coach. Mike Tyson's fighting Roy Jones Jr. in September, dude, in an eight-round exhibition fight.
I mean, I do like freak show fights. And so, you know what, I will be tuning in just like I – granted, I may actually pay for this. I pirated the Liddell Tito fight. I'll probably actually pay for the Tyson Roy Jones Jr. one, just because, I mean, it's fun, and I've never seen Mike Tyson fight live. And again, like you said, it's like two old guys want to fight each other. Cool. Who are we to stand in their way?
I don't know if you've seen the videos. I'm almost positive you have seen the videos. I'm almost positive you've probably shared them to your Facebook of Mike Tyson fucking hitting pads, dude. Like, Holy moly, dude. This guy looks in better shape now than he did 15 years ago. And my God,
dude. Oh, he's still sharp as hell.
Yeah.
You know? I really respect his reasons for wanting to fight again, you know, because he was like, he'll be the first to tell you that he was just fucking out of his mind during that period of his life.
Yeah.
And so now I think he wants to show that he can still do it as like a real boy and not just, you know, be the psychopath that he was in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, for sure. And I love how involved he is in the MMA world. I love that he's got a guy like Cordeiro training him. I love the podcast he does with guys like Francis Ngannou, and he's been on a show with a couple of other really talented UFC fighters. Like, I know he's close friends with Cody Garbrandt. I know that, like, he's very much involved in the UFC, and he's a really close friend of Dana's. I think he's just, like, it's almost like an awakening. Like, you know, like how Jorge Masvidal said it when he came back, you know, like the second coming, like, get ready to get baptized. So, I mean, obviously, Tyson's, what, in his 50s?
Yeah.
But for 50, I mean, if you're going to fight somebody, I heard a lot of murmurs that it could have been like Evander Holyfield is also trying to make a comeback. But Roy Jones, I mean, we're talking about two different eras of boxing, right? So it's really cool to see these two guys match up against each other. And fuck yeah,
exactly.
Man.
Exactly. I mean, and Roy Jones is, I believe, a little younger than Mike. He's also, though, a little smaller, and he's definitely over the hill, too. Like, he was actually never really the same guy since because he had gone up to heavyweight and tried to go back down. And he was never really the same after that. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. I think his chin's kind of not there anymore either, because I'm just assuming Tyson's probably isn't all there. I think it should be fun, you know, and if this goes well and he wants to do it again, hell, maybe that's when you put him against a guy like Andre Arlovsky, who's talked about doing boxing and stuff too. You know what I mean? Just let's do like fun freak show, fights and, that people tune in for.
For sure, man. And you were talking about pirating the Tito Chuck fight. I just want to give a big shout out to DAZN in Europe, man. The DAZN here in Europe is fucking badass. I pay 12 euros a month, and I get to watch all the fights without paying for them. So,
oh, you're lucky.
Oh, it's so sick, dude. I watched the last Anthony Joshua fight. I watched every single UFC card beginning to end. Unfortunately, sometimes it's in German, and it really pisses me off. But the mute button does work, so I can mute it, put some music on, and crank through these fights. Fuck yeah, man. Sorry?
I got nothing.
Yeah, I was going to say that I'm pretty sure that Fight Island's probably going to stay around for a lot longer than we imagine. I mean, Dana's been saying that Abu Dhabi is the new center of fighting at the moment, which, I mean, they're the only people putting on fight cards. So, I mean, I think Bellator, there's fights tomorrow. But I think if the coronavirus stuff continues to be as bad as it is in the U.S. and they can't import fighters, then there's no reason for them to give up Fight Island.
Oh, 100%. I mean, because I've said to you before, at first I'd wondered why they were bothering doing this big thing when, they could just do it in-house at the Apex Center.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if they can't use their international fighters, which is such a huge piece of their roster.
I mean, think about almost all the UFC champs, like half of them are international fighters, so.
Yeah, exactly. And if they're not ones that live in the States, then, they need to do it here. So I think that that's smart, especially, too, if we want to see, now I know – it sounds like from what Ali was saying on Twitter that Khabib and Gaethje isn't happening in September anymore, but it is going to happen before the end of the year.
Yeah. I think Dana said they're going to give him as much time. Yeah. Rest in peace to Khabib's father.
Exactly. And so it's like, it would be awful to rush him in a situation like that. And so, but he's somebody who's going to need Fight Island because he's back in Russia.
100%. I mean, that's obviously now with after all the Conor McGregor drama and the Dustin Poirier fight. I mean, he is a big draw. I think that he does have a massive viewing and they do want him to fight, but props to Dana for giving him all the time he needs. Like, obviously, I don't think a lot of people understand how big of an influence that Khabib's father was to that whole fight team. I mean, if you think about it, there's at least 15 to 20 guys probably in the UFC right now, maybe more. They're affiliated with Khabib's father and kind of the training that he gave to all these guys. And super sad to see him pass away, but also excited to see Khabib come back when the time is right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just read right here, right now, which is absolutely fucking ridiculous, that on the undercard of a freak fight is another freak fight. So the main card, like we said, is Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr. The undercard is Jake Paul versus Nate Robinson. Like the Nate Robinson that used to play for the Celtics, Nate Robinson.
Oh, God damn it. Why? That's not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? Cool. I'll watch it. I bet.
Yeah, fuck it, right? Like, a couple drinks in, I'll watch Jake Paul maybe get his ass kicked. Why not?
Oh, like, exactly. I mean, and honestly, like, I find boxing doubles be more fun with guys that really know how to box.
Yeah, 100%, because then you just get guys, like, fucking throwing absolutely ridiculous punches and running away and jabbing, and they're all tired. And
yeah, at least be quicker.
Yeah, 100%, dude. Well, thanks for this week, man. I think we covered a lot. Shout out to everyone for listening to the podcast. Yeah. Hope you guys watch the fights this weekend. Hope you guys tune in. We are looking for some guests moving forward. So if anyone would like to join the podcast, feel free to let us know. Cheers, guys. Bye.